Welcome, fair listeners, to Much Ado About Wrestling, the show where we believe when it comes to wrestling factions, you either break up as the heroes or stick around long enough to become the Blue World Order. That will make sense soon to you listeners, I promise. I'm one half of your scholarly presenters, Andrew Terrence Caberline, and with me, as always, is the enforcer, Tyler Ward. Tyler, how are you doing?
Oh boy, Andrew. I'm good, man. I'm doing very good. It's starting to get cold around Virginia. Mm-hmm. I saw a great meme the other day that was like, man, the weather went from 90 to 55. Like, I just saw a state trooper. And I was like, yeah, that's accurate, man. It's getting chilly. Good. But lot of news in the wrestling world. A lot of things we got to cover. But yeah. I'm excited to. I'm pumped. How you doing up north?
I'm doing good. I spent a lot of yesterday outside. I went to an Oktoberfest thing, like upstate New York.
Yeah.
As far as I can remember, it was really fun. But I didn't really have phone service for like the entire day, so I woke up this morning to seeing some interesting wrestling news that I think you did as well. I think maybe we need to talk about it for a bit at the top of the show.
Yeah, definitely.
So we were going to try and chat for a bit about our thoughts of Australia's Super Showdown from last weekend, which was the first, or I guess the second, of three scheduled kind of glorified house shows that the WWE has put on this year. But I think the third one is a bit more pressing now. The Crown Jewel event that was slated to happen in Saudi Arabia. Something interesting happened this morning when you went on the website, Tyler. What exactly happened on WWE.com?
So I pulled it up, and the order of events that I found an article, and the title of it was, and this was posted about 2 hours ago, WWE removes event location and ticket link from Crown Jewel webpage. And I was like, oh wow, this is okay. So they're actually going to do something about this. And then immediately posted next to that was an article updated 1 hour ago that says WWE says Crown Jewel event in Saudi Arabia is in fact still on and will happen.
Yeah. So despite the headline of that, I'm not quite so sure that it will still happen, or that it will still happen in the way that was originally sought out.
Yeah, you know? I'm still not sure. So let's, if you want to, can we give like a very simplified as an unpolitical version of what's going on?
Yeah, this is weird. In a United States currently where politics seems to really fracture people on two sides, this is an issue that seems to be on both sides of the aisle. People are imploring WWE to not go on with this event in Saudi Arabia. And the reason for that is because there is a lot of news this week about a journalist, Jamal Khashoggi. I'm sure I destroyed his last name, but he may have been killed by agents of the Saudi government after a kidnapping plot went wrong. And the leadership in Saudi Arabia right now is very popular socially, but not privately. I guess there's a lot of human rights violations that may or may not be going on there, including killing journalists who disagree with their leader, which is not a good look. They have a lot of thoughts about women that are very different than Western thoughts. And the WWE was coming in with this show and with the Greatest Royal Rumble earlier this year in an attempt to get paid a lot of money.
I think it needs to be said that's definitely was the primary reason,
motivating factor. Yeah,
the show.
And in the Saudi government side, it was supposed to be I don't want to say propaganda, but it's supposed to be a public display of how more forward thinking their current leader is. So it was like good for everybody, but now a lot of politicians on both sides are saying like, hey, maybe you shouldn't go do this show on November 2nd in this country while we are having this kind of hotbed issue with it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And it becomes a bit more complicated because Linda McMahon, who still has ties to the WWE since Vince is her husband, she is on the Small Business Bureau for Trump. And this seems like a thing where if Trump wanted a little bit of goodwill from everybody, this would be an easy thing to like talk to Linda and be like, hey, tell your husband not to go do that show there.
Yeah.
And then everyone
shut it
will
down.
Be happy that I did that. Yeah. So it's, I'm not sure if it's going to happen. Is there any like precedent really for WWE canceling a pay-per-view? And whether or not this is really a pay-per-view is a whole nother thing.
So,
but.
So I don't believe so. I certainly can't think of another situation where they've canceled due to, you know, an outside factor such as this. But it's really interesting when you break down the ideas of like, can they cancel it? And it was, and it's because so that when they set up these Saudi Arabia shows, it's a contract. They created a contract with the Saudi Arabian like government or whoever they booked it with to put on these shows and stuff. And so I'm not sure the parameters of the contract, whether or not it was one document that said you will do X amount of shows in our country, and then once that number has been fulfilled, this contract is complete. Or whether or not they do individual contracts per show.
Yeah.
So if it's the prior one, they are contractually obligated to put this show on. And were they not to, that would be a breach of contract. And the WWE and all of its stockholders and shareholders can be sued. So there's certainly a legal and like business precedent of why they wouldn't cancel the show.
I'm sure that I wonder if the performers on the show, since it is a lot of returning people and one-offs, I wonder if they have guaranteed money whether or not the show happens. So like, even if WWE decided like that they are opposed to this too and want to get out, it may cost them and not the Saudi government and not the American government. So it might be like, how much of a financial loss versus what kind of stance they want to take about human rights, which is not something that I feel like Vince McMahon wants to talk about ever. He's like, oh, I just want to put on a wrestling show and get paid.
And I think I was talking to Jordan about this and just trying to like, you know, figure out like what they were going to do and everything. And, you know, just it's trying to put the politics of it aside as much as possible and really just look at it at the wrestling aspect. They have invested so much in the Crown Jewel pay-per-view in terms of their storylines. Every one of their major storylines on Raw, on SmackDown, like, and the women's divisions on both of those, like, has a major story point happening at Crown Jewel. You have the entire build up the return of the Undertaker and Shawn Michaels coming out of retirement. Like, they've been building this up for months now. Like, if this pay-per-view just doesn't happen, like, WWE is notoriously good at, you know, calling an audible when they need to and just either scrapping storylines on a whim or changing it or something like that. But I'm very curious to see the game plan for if they were to cancel it. Like, how can you just pretend, like, just change, like, the numerous storylines that were going to be affected by this pay-per-view? That was what I'm most interested in. I just want to see how they're going to get out of that.
I think if they're going to cancel it or not do it in Saudi Arabia, we will know at the end of tonight's Raw. I think it will kind of have to be picked. Just looking at the calendar, it's 2 weeks and change until the show. And I guess if they decide they can't do it, then one way they could swerve is the Women's Evolution pay-per-view is on the 28th of October.
Yes.
So they could take the three already announced really big matches.
For the women, at least.
Well, no, because none of the women's matches were supposed to be on Crown Jewel.
They can't wrestle there anyway. You're right.
But they got the three big shows the three big matches for Crown Jewel announced. Mm-hmm. They could do all of those on the Women's Evolution Go Home Raw show.
Yeah.
Be like, hey, we're going to just do this super show here. We'll get a bunch of eyes who are casual or like old fans who are like, hey, The Undertaker and D-Generation X and Shawn Michaels is going to be there. Yeah, I'm in. And then they can use that to promote the Women's Evolution pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe the World Cup thing they wanted to do, you do on SmackDown the next night, the same kind of thing. I guess that would kind of work. It would still lose money, but it would garner some some good advertising mm-hmm. payback, I guess. Here's the other thing that really, I think, complicates the story is that in the purported main event of this pay-per-view, one of the four competitors is a sitting U.S. mayor.
Oh, okay.
And so in yeah, Kane and Glenn Jacobs, so I think the bad press headlines would go from wrestling company does event in human rights, you know, torn country,
right,
to U.S. wrestling company with U.S. mayor perform at human rights violating country, you know, right. And yeah, I think that is a little bit worse for everybody.
None of it's good.
Yeah.
Because
the show probably won't be good either. So
no, none of it's good. Because I was thinking about that too. Like I don't see any sort of good PR coming out of this. But also because so basically the idea, I'm pretty sure the WWE's idea was that if it could be proven that the Saudi Arabian government, the Crown Prince's regime, was responsible and did in fact murder this journalist, mm-hmm. then they probably would cancel it. But there's also like the chances of that being proven in the next 2 weeks is slim to none. So
yeah, but then they have to be worried about like backwards bad press of like,
exactly.
Well,
I don't see them canceling it under any circumstance before the event happens, but they may just have to play cleanup after and be like, hey, we didn't know at the time.
Yeah. And I think this is going to be a really interesting story to unfold in the next few months, especially with the Fox deal still happening. Like, I wonder if like this would give other companies
pause. Oh, if this would affect the
pause.
Fox deal.
I don't know. I think it will depend on how Fox News reports any bad fallout, I think.
Yeah.
But we'll see. That really gets into like a weird political.
Yeah.
And like the way that journalism works. But like, again, this is not a one side or the other kind of issue. Mm-hmm. And I think when a journalist is killed, I think any kind of news network with any kind of leaning is quick to defend one of their own, you know?
Yeah.
But we'll see. Yeah. So that's fun.
That's a heavy way to get into the episode. Andrew, do you have a way to kind of release the tension for us? What else is going on in the wrestling world?
I will say that I did really like Super Showdown, actually. I thought that was a great show, and showed that these little glorified house shows could be fun. But I think that was also with a fan base in Australia that's much more in tune with the product than what we're going to get in Saudi Arabia. I have one other wrestling in the media type news item I want to get to, but I think we're going to save that for the end of the show for my undercard MVP.
Oh, excellent.
If that's okay. Yeah,
absolutely.
So there's a reason to keep listening. Also, we're going to get into fun stuff now. We're going to get past human rights violations and into the good old fashioned storytelling of wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
So do you want to kind of lead us into our word of the day?
Yes, absolutely. So we are back with the normal episodes. We have a wonderful vocab word for you guys today to help you.
An amazing one.
To better understand the wonderful, fabulous world of professional wrestling. And today it's generally one of my favorite ones because this is one of my favorite parts of professional wrestling. Mm-hmm. And today we are talking about factions. Professional wrestling factions. I'm all about it.
And what exactly is a faction, Tyler?
Well, so you see, a faction is when any three or more superstars, whether they be male, female, whether they be managers, whether they be people who aren't even wrestlers, honestly, want to team up to basically work towards a common interest. And they usually control championships on their brand, airtime, power, things like that. They work together to better everyone's name.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of different terms that are interchangeable with faction. You'll hear stable a lot, but I think stable has kind of become a little bit antiquated. I think faction and faction warfare is kind of how you see people refer to it now. And there can be factions within factions. There can be factions that kick out members and replace them with other members. It can be a whole lot of things, and it's a really nice storytelling tool because it leads itself to turns and wonky finishes. It is a really good catalyst for storytelling in general.
Yes, absolutely. And so if you're asking yourself, well, if factions are such a big deal in professional wrestling, why have you guys waited till the 19th episode to talk about it? And, the reason is, you know, with the Monday Night Raw, their main storyline right now is being dominated by faction warfare, as we've said, between the newly reformed S.H.I.E.L.D. and Braun Strowman's Dogs of War faction that he is now leading. There's also the implosion of Chaos, Okada's faction in New Japan Pro Wrestling, and of course the brilliance of the Undisputed Era in NXT. They're always my favorite, honestly, at this point. Best part of wrestling. But we are seeing a resurgence of wrestling factions across every brand, across WWE, New Japan, Ring of Honor, all over the place. And we're seeing, again, how you had said that they can be used to intertwine storylines, elevate talent, and honestly sell a buttload of t-shirts.
They're very good at that.
Yes, very good at that.
So we said that a faction has to usually have three or more members. I think we've kind of had debates about this before, about whether a team of three people is truly a faction. But we'll say for the sake of argument that you got to have at least three people. Yeah. What are the kind of roles for like the classic character archetypes for members within a faction?
Well, so number one, first off, you got to have your leader. Every faction, most factions have a leader. They have the person who either brings the group together or is the one with the vision. They're the one, they have the goal in mind, they know what they're doing, and everyone else is following their orders because they're the brains.
And almost always, not all the time, but almost always, the leader is the person who is presumed to be challenging for the world title as well.
Exactly.
From the group. It's the person who the rest of the group is trying to help the most.
Yes. And that's how a good thing with factions is they it's natural being, they have a given like hierarchy within a faction. You have your leader who is labeled as your top guy. He is the one challenging for the top belts. And then you can, of course, just tier system everyone else in the faction. After that, of course, the leader, I would say another very important character you always have is your enforcer. The muscle, the brawn of the faction.
Unless it's Braun Strowman, because he's the leader of the Dogs of War.
That's true. Yeah. See, they like to mix it up every now and then.
Yeah, but the enforcer is usually the muscle. It's usually the quietest person in the group. It's got to be, they have to be taller or physically more imposing than the leader, I think. And I think their role is usually to initiate the weird interference or screwy save in a match for their group. It's also a great spot to put people in who aren't great talkers yet, but look really good. A good faction should really hide the weaknesses of an individual wrestler. Who are your favorite like enforcers from wrestling factions?
You can't talk about enforcers without talking about the enforcer, AA, Arn Anderson. He was the muscle, the enforcer of the Four Horsemen, one of the classic factions in professional wrestling. Personally, one of my favorites, though, because I think he's certainly the biggest success story in terms of the enforcer, would definitely be Batista.
Yes.
Batista was brought into the Evolution faction, not the new women's pay-per-view coming up, but the Triple H run faction back in the early 2000s. And he, Batista, had that exact role. He was this very large, physically imposing character. He looked great. He was a physical specimen, but those first times that he was on screen and they debuted him, never really talked much. He didn't need his words because he had his physicality to speak for himself. He was the enforcer of the faction. And he, I think he's the biggest success story for me personally of like a clear enforcer who then went on to singles success afterwards.
Yeah, and mainstream success too. I think I can't stress how green and how novice he was when he was put into Evolution. He'd only been on TV on the main roster for a few months, and the entire time he hadn't said any words. He was the lackey. He was called the Demon Deacon before this for D'Von Dudley. That. They tried to do a thing with him as a reverend, and Batista as the Demon Deacon would walk around being the muscle. Before that, he was a big part of Ohio Valley Wrestling, which was like the NXT of WWE at that point, and he was the Leviathan, and again, he was just a big scary dude who didn't talk. So he had not said like a single word anywhere on TV, and then suddenly found himself with one of the best contemporary wrestlers of that time, Triple H, and the best talker maybe of all time, Ric Flair. And it's kind of crazy to think that, but that groomed him and made him a better wrestler over time. And if you've never seen Evolution before, they will actually all be together on SmackDown tomorrow. They're reuniting for Raw 1000. Or sorry, not Raw 1000, SmackDown 1000.
SmackDown 1000. In the most ironic of ways, the first time that faction has ever been on SmackDown.
Yeah, that's kind of weird. But hey, they're going to be there. What are the other two kind of like members usually in a faction? This, like, they have to have a leader, they have to have an enforcer, and then after that you can kind of have some different roles.
Yeah, so I would say moving past the most like defined roles of your leader, your enforcer, it does kind of get to a gray area where you don't necessarily have like official terms for people like, oh, this is our whoever or something. It's more along the lines of like, I like to compare them all when I think of like the archetype of a faction. It definitely goes back to like the Evolution. So because I think they had every like necessary character in there. So you have Triple H as your leader, Batista is your enforcer. The next one that I would say that isn't a necessary, but it certainly worked wonders within Evolution was Ric Flair. You have your old grizzled veteran who at one time certainly would have been the leader of this faction, but he's clearly not past his prime, you could say, and is now there to provide wisdom to the current leader and support them and roles like that, to give them basically it's their veteran knowledge is what they are giving to the faction.
And I think a lot of the times that role doesn't necessarily have to be an in-ring wrestling role. A lot of time that is what the manager will do in this. I feel like that's what J.J. Dillon did for the original Four Horsemen. And Ric Flair was kind of a player coach in that way, where he could do both of those things simultaneously. And a good faction will also most of the time have one or two what I would call blue chippers. And that's someone who is really, really young, could in time take over for the leader, but is way ahead of schedule. And you always get a good storyline out of that if and when eventually that blue chipper does actually groom into a good performer. They are able to turn on the faction and become like a loved hero. And that's exactly what happened to Randy Orton inside of Evolution, and to Batista too, but I don't think that's what they intended for him to have happen. But Evolution maybe is the best example of a faction elevating a current performer and making future stars out of the lower members in it too. I think past the blue chip or two, you can always round out a faction with like a tag team, a designated duo within it.
You can have your tag team competitors that you bring in to vie for the tag team belts. Now, of course, in some factions, you have the option to just combine, say, your blue chipper and your enforcer, and then those will be your tag team champions or something like that. Much like Evolution did. I think we're going to keep coming back to this metaphor that Evolution was the perfect faction or something.
Yeah, so. I think they were. I mean, the Four Horsemen is definitely the most classic.
Yes.
Like the first, I would say, although I really tried to find somewhere about the first time that a faction or stable happened in wrestling, and I couldn't. Before
in
that,
a weird way, not to interrupt you, but I think going back to like I was joking that Evolution was like the best faction ever, but like they kind of were.
because
was a time when they literally held all of the gold on the brand, when Triple H was the World Heavyweight Champion, Randy Orton was the Intercontinental Champion, Batista and Ric Flair were the Tag Team Champions. Like they dominated every possible storyline on the show.
And they were perfect villains. It was called the Reign of Terror, that early 2000s run that they had, because they would beat a lot of really popular, you know, wrestlers at the time and people like The Undertaker and Rob Van Dam and Booker T and Chris Jericho. These are people that they were systematically beating. Goldberg was someone who they fought with a lot. And I remember
and they got Motorhead to do their theme song. What a heel move, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember hating Evolution as a kid. I wanted them to lose, and they always looked like they were going to lose and then somehow pulled it out. Which I think that's the best thing that a heel group can do as a faction as well. I was gonna ask, I couldn't find like the earliest version of a faction. I think if you go back to the territory days, you get something like the Heenan family, where like the manager as the leader stays in a territory forever, and they just cycle in people in and out of the faction. But that was kind of like he would show up with a new, totally different group of people as his family, like every few months. So I think those factions were, that's more like a stable to me.
Yeah.
Like a
I think that makes me think more like the Von Erichs in a way could be a faction. Like,
yeah, the Von Erichs and the Freebirds might be.
Yeah.
And the Funks. Like, but those are a lot of the times those people were tied together by legitimate blood relations. And you don't see as much of that anymore. I think people started to realize like, oh, you can make groups that are a tight bond without them being actually related to each other. Should we move on to how are factions used differently in WWE than, say, somewhere like New Japan?
Well, I think in modern terms, in WWE, they're used very sparingly. In the past, honestly, several years, like, the factions haven't been a very big thing within WWE, and I think that's goes to the WWE mentality of they want to build a superstar. They focus primarily on one guy to be the face of the company, who that's, you know, the individual aspect of it, where New Japan Pro Wrestling, they of course they do have, you know, their ace of the company, you know, things like that. But I think for New Japan, it's a lot more given, I would say, that you would be a part of a faction within that company, within their storylines, of course. I remember when I first started getting into New Japan Pro Wrestling a few years ago, I was like, man, like, literally everyone is in a faction these days.
Yeah. There's very few wrestlers who are not in factions in New Japan, probably like less
than
10. And
I think if they're not in a faction, it's specifically storyline reason of why, and it plays into their character, given, let's say, like
Chris Jericho,
Shibata.
Or Shibata.
Yeah.
That's a better example than Chris Jericho. And I think that because so much of the New Japan booking method is to make singles matches feel special and important and different, so many of their matches are 3-on-3 or 4-on-4. That's just how they work. And if you're going to have that sustained, you have to have deep groups of people who can switch up which three
you gotta
are
have,
going out there.
You got to have reasons why you have these three people teaming up when these three people, like, there's got to be an impetus for it.
Yeah. And I think it is a really smart way to take new wrestlers and groom them up slowly and put within them a brand that people like. Like, people will buy t-shirts that say Chaos, and mm-hmm. even if he's not the biggest member of the group, you know, the youngest young lion who's just the towel boy of Chaos can be like, hey, that's my shirt that they bought. You know, right. It attaches you to a brand. Whereas in the WWE, I'm going to try and go through the only factions we've seen this decade, really.
Okay.
They've been the Shield, which turned all three of them into superstars, but that's really yes. like a diamond in the rough. Like, that doesn't happen often.
Yeah, that's very rare that yeah. All members of the faction come out as mm-hmm. world champions.
Yeah. And the New Day doesn't really try to elevate any one person, but they're also yeah. like a weird diamond in the rough.
Yeah.
Every other faction that they've had in the past 10 years has been very specifically built around one person or mm-hmm. an all-out comedy thing, like the Social Outcasts. Yeah. Then you have like mm-hmm. the Miztourage, which I'd say is a faction, but it's really yeah. just to help the Miz. Or you had Legacy, the kind of redo of Evolution that really was just to make Randy Orton look good.
Right.
So you don't have that many factions anymore that feel like living, breathing things mm-hmm. without the main leader in it. Like, the Miztourage doesn't exist without the Miz.
Yeah.
You know?
The Edgeheads don't exist without Edge.
Yeah, that is true. the Edgeheads. Wow. We talked about a few of the most famous factions of all time, but I think we actually have not touched on the two most popular in terms of t-shirt sales of all time.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Do you want to hop into the NWO and who they are and how they may have influenced the Bullet Club?
Oh boy, do I. So yeah. I'm sure for a lot of our listeners right now, even if you are tuning in to Much Ado About Wrestling to learn about wrestling because you don't know that much, there's a very strong chance that you have seen an NWO shirt, you have heard about the NWO, the New World Order, or something along those lines just within pop culture.
Mm-hmm. Currently, there's a college football team that has a big championship belt with the NWO logo on it, and they give it to the defensive player who gets like an interception.
Yeah,
that is like a
thing.
That's
awesome. Yeah. And so basically, so the NWO, the New World Order, arguably the most popular wrestling faction of all time.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah. And so the New World Order was a wrestling faction that began in the WCW in the late 90s. This was a faction that was started by Scott Hall and Kevin Nash.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the impetus of this faction was that Scott Hall and Kevin Nash were two WWE, of course, WWF at the time,
mm-hmm.
contracted wrestlers who they had been in WWF, and like, people knew them as their characters there. Those contracts expired. I'm pretty sure expired before.
Yeah,
they did. Right?
They expired, and then they jumped ship.
So their contracts expired, and then they showed up on the episodes of WCW Nitro. And it was a very kind of like, it was supposed to be like a shoot, like they showed up unannounced, and I always remember Scott Hall getting into the ring on Nitro and his weird denim vest getup he had. I loved it. And getting on the mic and him saying, he's like, you know who I am, but you don't know why I'm here.
Like, mm-hmm.
It's so great.
They were great in that they were, I think, the first faction to be a invading faction.
Yes.
Which now
yes.
when you see it, you know instantly that it is part of the storyline. But they yeah. were coming in through the crowd. They weren't coming out to music. Mm-hmm. It seemed like they were taking over the show. And
right.
because we didn't hear them by their character names that we recognized them on, mm-hmm. WCW did a really good job of making it seem like the WWF was taking over.
It wasn't Razor Ramon and Diesel going
yeah.
in there.
Yeah, they couldn't claim, like, hey, these are our people. Mm-hmm. But then fans who were WWF fans would switch to go watch WCW because they were under the impression that their WWF heroes were going in there to take mm-hmm. over. And yep. I think the NWO works so well, too, because their intentions were very clear. I think a lot of factions, even good ones, don't have a very clear like mission statement.
Mm-hmm.
But Razor Ramon, sorry, not Razor Ramon, Scott Hall said it best when he was like, hey, we're taking over.
Yep.
And that's what you knew that they were going to do the whole time. Yeah.
And so at this point, if you're saying to yourself, well, Tyler, Andrew, you guys said a factions are three or more people.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. And you could say that the real explosion of the NWO and the wrestling scene to when it really became like the new it thing was when the NWO debuted their third member. Mm-hmm. Their third member, of course, turning out to be none other than Hulk Hogan himself, arguably the most popular wrestler of all time.
Yep. Certainly at that point, he was in his height of Hulkamania. He had come over to WCW. It was a big deal. He had been doing some TV and stuff like that. And this is one of the last truly like big giant heel turns that we've seen.
Yes.
The amount of
arguably the biggest heel turn ever at the time, because this was Hulk Hogan. This was the most recognizable face in professional
wrestling. The most
kid-friendly
wrestler.
Exactly, the most kid-friendly wrestler ever. He was Hulkamania. He was eat your Wheaties, say your prayers, like, oh man.
And he turns on his former best friend Randy Savage at Bash at the Beach. Your Great American Bash. There were a lot of Bash pay-per-views.
Yeah, I think it's probably Bash at the Beach.
Yeah, it was. It was Bash at the Beach, 1996, July 7th.
Bash at the Beach, 96, yes. But so he made his heel turn and then rounded out the now three-man faction of the New World Order. And at that point, they took the wrestling world by storm. They dominated the storyline on WCW television for the next years at this point. And that's not even getting into the fact of like the backstage politics of like Hulk Hogan being in charge of having creative control of himself and things like that. But also, I mean, whether or not I think he had that sort of power backstage or not, NWO was still the hottest thing in wrestling at the time. Like it was such a organic excitement for the fans of being like, we've never seen this happen. This idea of this like faction coming in and like literally taking over the promotion. Like, can they even do that? Like,
and they did. And then this is where the NWO changes from being revolutionary to being catastrophic. They're supposed to be villains, and they're so cool that people root for them anyway. And the problem with that is that the greatest faction of all time up until that point, the Four Horsemen, who had been the linchpin of WCW and Jim Crockett Promotions, like to this fan base for so long, had been the biggest thing there was. They come in to try to save WCW from the NWO, and the NWO is just doing a Four Horsemen impression, but like more modern timed and cooler and more speaking to the youth. So then suddenly you're not showing up to WCW to root for them to win. You're actually happy when the company that you like is losing. And then no one wants to be on the good guys who aren't being cheered. So then everyone wants to be in the NWO instead. And then everyone literally is in the NWO.
Literally everyone.
Everyone gets a turn and they just balloon and it loses really what's special about it. So how has the Bullet Club learned from the NWO?
So the Bullet Club, this is, we've talked about Bullet Club many times on this show before. They are arguably the second most popular wrestling faction in history. If you don't believe me, there's t-shirts everywhere. And so the Bullet Club, they have always mirrored the NWO in a lot of aspects. I think the biggest aspect, of course, being the Bullet Club began in New Japan Pro Wrestling as sort of the Gaijin faction. The Gaijin, of course, the Japanese term for foreigner, I believe. And so the Gaijin faction would be all of the non-Japanese wrestlers in New Japan, the American wrestlers, the European wrestlers, things like that. They would come in and It was started by Finn Balor, Prince Devitt at the time. And then he had Bad Luck Fale,
Carl
Tamatonga, Carl Anderson, all these non-Japanese wrestlers within New Japan, and they just wreaked havoc over there. They were amazing heels, and it very much had that same feel of like these invaders coming into our promotion and trying to take over. Very, very similar to the NWO coming into WCW, and just a hostile takeover of everything that we know.
Yeah, and I would argue that it actually is even more impactful because the Japanese style of wrestling and the foundation of it is much more rigid than American wrestling, and the fans are more polite, and there are certain things you do and don't do. And the Bullet Club came in as foreigners not only to take over but to threaten their way of life. And it allowed them to be ridiculous and do ridiculous stuff. And I think that is why they're black and white, and that is why they do a lot of stuff they do, is as a direct homage to the Bullet Club, or not to the Bullet Club, to the NWO. See, it's working. I mean, Too Sweet as a hand motion is taken directly from the NWO. And I think the theme music, if you play the NWO theme music and then play a few seconds of the Bullet Club theme music, I think you would have a hard time if you didn't know them on the onset. Like, you wouldn't be able to tell when I've switched from one song to the other.
Yeah. Quickly.
Yeah. So those are kind of the biggest factions in terms of like singular popularity. I'll say really quickly before we move on is, do you foresee the Bullet Club having the same issues that the NWO did late in their career?
Absolutely. And I think we have already started to see the issues. Those issues just being oversaturation, really. Just too many people involved and not enough storylines, I guess, to say, to go around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think they certainly have had a few times where they've ballooned in members. But I think they've kind of stopped that more recently for the Bullet Club in particular. And
but they've also, I mean, at this point, they have started to do like the following step of what NWO has done in splitting the faction into separate ones at this point.
Mm-hmm. I do think that the split between members for Bullet Club, between the Elite and the OGs, makes a lot more sense storyline wise.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Than the NWO breakup into Hollywood and Wolfpack. It was kind of like, well, we have to put some big stars on both sides and just kind of like. But they kept the same logo, both of them. Just one was red and one was white. And I think for the Bullet Club OG, they have a totally different looking shirt. And the kind of like Bullet Club Elite are starting to have totally different looking merchandise. So I think you'll actually see the retirement of the Bone Soldier like iconic Bullet Club logo. So I think the Bullet Club is actually close to ending, and it will just become these two totally different new factions. I think that's the much smarter way to go about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who are the other big factions that we can quickly touch on of today and yesteryear that we haven't mentioned?
Yeah. I think another faction that has to be mentioned that would be one of the more classic factions would have to be Degeneration X.
Yes.
So DX back in the day was essentially WWF's response to the NWO. They saw how successful the NWO was in WCW, how it was getting over with fans, and they were like, well, shoot, we need something that can compete with this. So they came up with Degeneration X.
And their mission was more to be sophomoric. Kind of. I mean, they wanted to win titles too, but they wanted to do it on their own terms against like the company and against like the way that people should behave. It was more of like a generational thing, as their name implies.
A degenerational thing?
Yeah, a degenerational thing, because they're a bunch of degenerates. And they had the best leader and I guess like cohort group ever, because he wasn't the enforcer between Shawn Michaels and Triple H, and then China as an enforcer was the most unique thing. The female behemoth China,
the female enforcer, I
made that group work. And then you added a tag team to it in the New Age Outlaws, who are already established as great talkers. And then Billy Gunn could be an enforcer as well. And that group was really perfect. They're known primarily for two things. For saying suck it and crotch chopping themselves as they did that.
Yes. So if you've ever been to middle school or public school in general, and some little rat kid told you to suck it and then slapped his crotch, it's because of TX.
Yeah, it's probably the year between the years 1997 and 2004. If you're
exactly,
I think we were both those rat kids at some point. I definitely got in trouble.
Oh yeah, I've definitely done that before.
There's one amazing clip that they used to have in like montages of DX, or maybe it was actually in the DX theme song, of them going around on the DX Express, their bus, and you see like traffic is stopped and this legitimate cop gets out of his car and stands on top of the car, realizes DX is there, and he starts doing the crotch chop. So that's kind of how far reaching that was. So they're known for that. Yes. And they're known for their invasion of WCW. Do you want to talk about that for a bit?
Yeah. So, again, how we were talking about that the NWO was the first like faction known for this sort of invasion of a brand. They came in and invaded WCW wrestling. And so DX being the WWF's response to the NWO and WCW, they were like, oh, well, we can do an invasion angle too, except we're not going to invade ourselves. We're going to invade you guys. And so on an episode of Raw,
April 27th, 1998, by the way.
April 27th, 1998.
In Norfolk, Virginia, too.
Ooh. And so they had an episode of Raw. They had I'm pretty sure it was a pre-taped segment, or was it like a live feed? It was probably
It was pre-taped.
Yeah. And so they had a pre-taped segment where D-Generation X literally rolled up to the arena where WCW Nitro was happening that night, and in a tank of, mind you, with very like military-esque garb on. They had like the hard helmets on and a lot of camo, and they rolled up to the arena on this tank with a megaphone, essentially just calling out WCW to come out. They were like, this is the invasion, like we're invading the competition. Now, nothing really ever came of this. Like no WCW superstars ran out there, and there was no brawl in the parking lot. But like it was certainly a big news in the wrestling world when this happened.
And that's something that WCW officials have talked about being a mistake on their part in retrospect, that they were afraid to let the door open and see what was going to happen creatively, and it made WCW seem uncool by not answering that door. And that's really what WCW had going for it. And they've all kind of said, like, man, we should have just let them in and, like, seen what would have happened. You said your favorite faction today is the Undisputed Era. I would love to hear why.
Yeah, and that's Undisputed.
I'm going to dispute it after you, actually. We're going to get into it here.
There's a few reasons why. I think to boil it down to the simplest thing is I am a very big fan of all of the members within the faction.
I agree.
I think they're all great, amazing wrestlers in their own right. They all bring something else to the table, and I think they all have very bright futures. Adam Cole being the head of the faction, the de facto leader. I think Adam Cole, the only thing that's going to stop him from being Universal Champion is his size. He's not the largest superstar. He's about like 6 feet, like maybe 200 pounds.
I don't think he's close to 200. Legitimately, at least.
Legitimately, yeah. Kayfabe, he's probably 206.
Kayfabe, he's billed at 210 pounds, and that's ridiculous.
Yes, of course he is. But so Adam Cole, he's not the biggest guy, so that could be the only thing that's going to hold him back from like being the top guy in the company. But I think he has all of the other tools. He's an amazing wrestler. He is incredible on that mic. He is one of the top five guys in WWE on the mic at this point. He's great. He's awesome. I love Adam Cole. But then you also have your guys holding the other like necessary points in the faction. You have Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish, who when they came in were your de facto tag team guys. Bobby Fish, of course, was injured, and then they brought in Roderick Strong, and he kind of took that role on himself as well. But you see, the beauty of for the Undisputed Era, the beauty of it for me is that Roderick Strong, Kyle O'Reilly, and Bobby Fish, who are all three technically the underlings of Adam Cole, are all on an equal level in that you could easily see all three of them as tag champions. You could easily see all three of them as intercontinental champions, as United States champions. Like they, they're North on American an equal champions. Playing field.
Yeah.
Yes, North American champions. They're on an equal playing field, but that playing field is just a step below the top. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think Roddy actually is like a really good enforcer for NXT. He's not bigger than anybody, but he's such a good bully. As a character, that it like makes him seem like the enforcer, just because he's more willing to get nasty right away.
And if I'm just being really like honest about it, like Kyle O'Reilly is a gem. Like he's just he's just wonderful. I don't know what else to say. He's amazing. I love watching anything he does.
He's so funny that like he brings a lot of brevity to the group. I will say my one issue with them right now is that I do think they feel more like a collection of good wrestlers right now, and I don't exactly know what the Undisputed Era means or what they really want. I'm waiting for them to have their moment where they do something like catchphrasey wise, or just like they have their segment that becomes like the their invasion of WCW or their
They suffer from the problem where they were thought out before they debuted the idea of like, well, they have a catchphrase. It's shock the system. And that's their goal is they want to come in and shock the system. But the problem is in like when you actually apply that, it's like, okay, well, what does that mean? Like what are you guys actually doing?
I think it means that how it should work is that they just do shocking things. Like the way they showed up was shocking.
The way they debuted. Sure. That was shocking.
Mm-hmm. But it's hard to do that on a show that's pre-taped.
Yeah, yeah, that's a very good point.
Maybe they'll work out better when they're on the main roster. I'm going to quickly go through. I just want to mention the Hart Foundation for a second. That Bret Hart and Owen Hart were usually the leaders of, because they had two other people in their faction that is a not often used role, but they both used it really well, and I think it's the wild card. The guy in the faction who's so crazy that the other people in the faction aren't even really sure about him.
I think
Jim Neidhart and the late departed Jim Neidhart and the late departed Brian Pillman both were really good for them in that role.
Yeah.
That's all we need to say about the Hart Foundation for now. They're really great, though.
Yeah.
there's one non-kayfabe faction that I think we should talk about for a second before we hop to the next segment, and that is the Click. You might say, like, well, what is a non-kayfabe faction? And they're really the only one. We tried to think of more.
Yeah, we tried to think of some other ones, and it got back to the idea of, like, the Von Erichs or the Harts, where, like, it's just an actual blood-related family or things like that. And and also how it applies within, like, the kayfabe, non-kayfabe split.
And this was a group, the Click, that made up big roles in DX and the NWO in the future. And this was a group of five guys backstage who were such good friends, who on screen portrayed both heroes and villains against each other, but they kind of kept other people down and pushed themselves up in a way that they got very political, depending on who you ask. And they did an incident called the Curtain Call in the mid-90s, right before Kevin Nash and Scott Hall left to go to WCW. They acknowledged in the ring at a house show at Madison Square Garden. Yeah.
Yeah. So the Click, by the way, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, Shawn Michaels, Triple H.
Shawn Waltman.
Oh, X-Pac. Was he part of the Click? I guess so.
According to the WWE Hall of Fame, he was inducted with the Click. So
whatever.
Yeah. And then Just Incredible, depending on who you ask. That's really the one that I feel like just kind of gets in there. But they have this moment where they break character live at Madison Square Garden at a house show, and they acknowledge that these two people who were just beaten in this match, who are bad guys, are going to leave, and all four of them hug each other in the ring and take a bow. This was a big no-no. It really confused people in the audience.
Yes, especially in fact, 90s pro wrestling. Ooh.
Yeah. I don't want to get into it too much because someone who may or may not be on our show as a guest here soon was in the building that night. So I'd love to get his thoughts on that, but we'll save that for a future episode.
Excellent.
But this was a big thing that got a lot of heat from Vince, but most of the people who were involved in it left. So then Triple H was actually the one who bared the brunt of this. And he was kind of punished creatively by being given a bunch of stupid gimmicks and losing a match to the Ultimate Warrior at WrestleMania in 11 seconds. So this is what happens when you break kayfabe. But then the Click themselves really were predominant through most of the major storylines of wrestling for the rest of the 90s and into the 2000s as well.
Yep.
Whew. That's a lot of factions. We didn't even touch on the New Day or the Shield, really, or LIJ. But there's plenty of them. You need to find the faction that's best for you out there and root for them, kind of like you would with a sports team.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So do we want to move on to a game really quickly?
Yes, absolutely. So in, the beautiful thing about factions in professional wrestling is that they can be a lot of fun. Mm. And what better way to enjoy wrestling factions than to play a game with them?
Yeah.
So Andrew and I have devised a game that we're going to have right now. And so we are going to quiz each other on wrestling factions, and specifically the very large factions that had a lot of members coming in and coming out. And so we're going to test our wrestling knowledge to see if we can guess who was in a certain faction at a certain time and who might not have been in that faction. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. You know, WCW closed 17 years ago, but we're pretty sure the NWO is still recruiting people. So it's going to be
pretty tough.
They
might actually be. So I think the way we should do this for the sake of time is we start guessing. And as soon as we get one that's wrong, like, you're done. And then we can kind of tell the other person who else was in that faction who they may have missed.
Oh, man. Okay.
Do you want to do that? Do you think you're going to be good?
Well, okay. Let's see what happens, buddy. All right, well, so
you sound a little apprehensive.
Well, there's a lot of members in these factions.
So yeah, we'll get
through them. I'm gonna let you go ahead and start it out.
Great. So Tyler, I'm giving you a modern classic. I want to know how many members you can name from the Bullet Club.
From the Bullet Club. So this is a tough one. The Bullet Club, arguably the second largest faction that we know of. So we got to start from the top.
I will also say quickly before you get into that, that there's a total of 29 members, past and present.
Lord. All right, here we go, from the top.
Yeah.
We have Prince Devitt.
Yep.
Bad Luck Fale.
Mm-hmm.
Tama Tonga.
Correct.
Carl Anderson.
Uh-huh.
Both Matt and Nick Jackson, the Young Bucks.
Mm-hmm.
We have Doc Gallows.
Mm-hmm.
We have Yujiro Takahashi, the Tokyo Pimp.
Yes.
We have AJ Styles.
Correct.
Hangman Page.
Mm-hmm. That's 10.
That's 10. All right. Kenny Omega.
That's 11.
Just because I don't know this, the order specifically, but just because I knew this was a thing, I gotta go ahead and just get this one out of the way. Jeff Jarrett.
Yep, Jeff Jarrett was in there for a very short window of time.
Just gonna get that out of the way. Let's see. Okay, so Adam Cole.
Mm-hmm.
Marty Scurll.
Yep.
Tongaloa.
Correct.
Oh boy.
We're kind of getting to the bottom of the barrel now.
We're getting to the hard ones. The original Bone Soldier. I don't know his name.
It's just Bone Soldier. Because it was just Mr. New Japan, or Captain New Japan was who he was before that.
The original Bone Soldier. Taiji Ishimori, the new Bone Soldier.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Chase Owens.
Oh, Chase Owens. That's a good one. I didn't know if
you forget Chase Owens, man. Ooh, and this is where we're going to get real hard.
You could forget Chase Owens.
You could forget Chase Owens. You probably could. All right, so here's where it's going to get tough. I'm at 18 right now, so I have, 11 names that I'm blanking on. Oh, boy. Let's see. So you got to have, are we, I'm going to take a guess. Is it, I don't know his name, but the other Tongan, the young, tall one, he just had his, like, his first couple matches, like, last year or something.
He is not on the Wikipedia.
I guess he doesn't technically count. I guess he wasn't actually a Bullet Club member. I honestly think,
You were very impressive.
I'm tapped.
Officially joining the Bullet Club OGs, recently there were three of them, which that's a lot of them, is Gato, Jado, and Jay White, the Switchblade.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize we were going to include them. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair.
I don't think you mentioned Cody.
Oh, I totally blanked on Cody.
Cody Rhodes. That? Yeah. You've also got joining recently Robbie Eagles. But those are all the like current ones. So you did pretty good in the current ones. You also got Cody Hall in there. Scott Hall's son was in there for 2 years. Frankie Kazarian was in the Bullet Club for about a month.
Oh yeah, when he did the turn
in
on
February and March
turn,
2017.
Yeah.
Also got there was a like Bullet Club Mexico for a little while. Had people like La Comandante and Rey Bucanero and Terrible.
I did not know any of
that. How did you not know about those? And also Stephen Amell.
And Stephen Amell, of course, yes.
Yeah. So you did pretty good on the Bullet Club there. It's kind of shocking that it's already got up to that many members.
I know, yeah, that's quite a lot. I would have guessed like maybe 20, but wow, I didn't.
Yeah,
those are some big numbers.
So you got an even bigger one for me, is that right?
I do, Andrew, because you have the pleasure, the privilege of figuring out who was in the NWO, the New World Order.
Great.
Now, if you want, we can limit this to what's called the original incarnation.
Mm-hmm.
This was July 7th, 1996 to April 1998. I believe so. This was before they broke off into like Hollywood.
Wolfpack
and
Hollywood.
Wolfpack.
Okay.
If you want, we can do just that because just looking at that list, it's easily 20, maybe 30.
Oh my
people.
God. Let's start with that. And I think this will be one where I will mention someone who, like, I'll get out like a wrong name because I'm just going to start guessing people from WCW at some point.
It's a pretty good, I mean, it's a solid strategy right there.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to start in order as best I can, remembering.
Okay.
I got to think back to like who was on the roster on WCW NWO Revenge, the N64 game. Okay, so Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, Hollywood Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage, Eric Bischoff. There's one that I'm pretty sure is like the next one in, but I don't want to say her because I don't know who she is. I don't want to end this that early. I'm going to go with Buff Bagwell. With Virgil. or Ted DiBiase.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes to both of those. Virgil, Vincent.
Vincent, rather. The Giant.
Yes.
Scott Norton.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. I'm going to go with Lex Luger. Is this where I get it wrong?
In the original.
I don't think he's in the original.
He is not in the original.
Oh no. That's where I get it wrong. So like him and Conan would have been in the Wolfpack and Sting.
Conan was in the original.
Conan was in the original? Dang. Was Six Pack in the original? Or Six Pac?
Six was in, yes, that's correct.
Ah, crap. And I guess Stevie Ray is in there too.
Stevie Ray. Not what I'm seeing. Okay, so also you put up some good numbers. I think you arguably had the harder faction here to go through.
Yeah. I was going to say Medusa was the one I was going to roll with, but I don't know if she was actually in the NWO.
At least not in the original one. So
okay,
fine. The big names you were missing, you had accompanying Randy Savage, Miss Elizabeth.
I missed Dennis Rodman. I know I already missed Dennis Rodman.
Honorable mention, Dennis Rodman. You also had Michael Wall Street.
Who the hell was that?
Is that IRS? Is that Rotunda?
Maybe. Yeah.
It might have been. Big Bubba Rogers.
Oh, of course.
I don't know who that is.
Yeah.
You had Tenzan, Conan, Kurt Hennig.
Oh, Kurt Hennig.
Kurt Hennig, Rick Rude.
Oh, boy.
Louis Spicoli?
Louis Spicoli, yeah, the inventor of the Death Valley Driver. Yeah.
Brian Adams.
Oh, Brian
The Disciple.
Adams.
Scott Steiner. Yeah. Nick Patrick. Dusty
the
Rhodes.
The referee. Dusty Rhodes was in the NWO for a second. Yep. That's so stupid.
And then the two that I didn't think you would get, but there was actually an NWO Japan, apparently,
at this
time.
Oh, was it Keiji Muda?
That was the great Muda and Masahiro Chono.
Okay. Well.
And that's just the original incarnation. There is also NWO Hollywood, the Wolfpack, NWO Elite, Black and White, NWO 2000.
Jeff Jarrett's
Blue
in
World
there.
Order.
Yeah. NWO, WWE. I can name all the members of NWO, WWE, because it was just the original plus Big Show and X-Pac and Booker T.
Mm-hmm.
God.
So, damn, that was good. Do you have another faction you wanted to quiz me on? Because I had one for you. I found a great one.
Great. I've got a good one for you. So I want to go with the Alliance. And I would love for you to start with just if you can remember the Alliance's team at Survivor Series.
Oh, wow.
That might be a good place to start. Or you can try to guess every member that there was of the Alliance. So this is a time when after WCW was purchased and ECW folded, where the WWF was broken up into two gigantic factions. It was either WWF or Alliance. So there were, quickly I'll give you the number, there were, there's got to be like 40 members of the Alliance. So just start naming undercard talent.
We're
going to
aim
until you
for
get one
just
wrong.
The Survivor Series team. Yeah. We're going to aim for that. Mm-hmm. So. If my memory serves correctly, this was during Austin's heel turn, and I'm pretty sure Austin was on the Alliance.
Yes,
side?
Austin was the leader of the Alliance, Steve Austin.
Okay, good, because I was worried about that. I was like, I'm pretty sure Austin was on the Alliance.
He was.
So, also on the Alliance was Booker T.
Mm-hmm.
And now here's going to get real tough. Oh, man. I'm pretty sure I want to, because it was ECW as well, or they
correct,
hadn't come in
correct.
Yet.
Correct. No, they had. This
it
is
was
at
ECW
the,
as
the
well.
The Survivor Series team is at the end of the Alliance. There's also the Invasion team at the beginning of the Alliance, which is totally different.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So I want to say Rhino?
Rhino was on the Invasion team, so I will count it.
Excellent.
He wasn't on the Survivor Series team, but he was on the Invasion one.
Survivor Series team. Oh, man, it's going to be tough. Okay. So we have Austin, Booker T.
There's only one more real non-WWF member of the Alliance team on the Survivor Series
really
team.
Really big one. And because I'm trying to think, because like there's a lot of like big WCW names that didn't come over during the Alliance. So I am going to say, it's tough. It wasn't WCW, but Rob Van Dam?
Rob Van Dam was on the team.
Yes. Okay, cool. And then so from there, not the like big name, I feel like that I'm still missing, but was Chuck Palumbo on the team?
No, he was not. That's where you get
he
it wrong.
He was just a member of
he
the
He was
Alliance,
in the Alliance, though. Yeah. So you can keep shooting darts and you would hit him. The final two members of that team were the owner, kayfabe of WCW, Shane McMahon.
Oh, of course Shane was on the team.
And the mole from WWF, Kurt Angle, was the other member of the Alliance team. Yeah.
Oh, wow. I forgot
but
about
just
that. Okay.
People who were on the Alliance in general, I'm going to run through them real fast, were Billy Kidman, Bubba Ray Dudley, Devon Dudley, Chris Kanyon, who better? Christian, the Hurricane, Ivory, Jazz, Just Incredible, Lance Storm, Molly Holly, Mike Awesome, Mike Sanders, Raven, Reno, Sean O'Hare, Sean Stasiak, Stacy Keebler, Stevie Richards, Test, Tommy Dreamer, William Regal, Charles Robinson, Deborah, Nick Patrick, Paul Heyman, Shane McMahon, Stephanie McMahon, Terry. You also have Buff Bagwell, Chuck Palumbo, Chavo Guerrero, Hugh Morris, Johnny Stamboli, Mark Jindrak, Tori Wilson, and Taz.
Wow. Shoo.
That's a lot of people.
That is a lot. That's a lot of people.
Yeah. So if you wonder why the alliance didn't work, there's your answer.
Because they came out the gate with the problem that NWO and the Bullet Club developed is way too many people. They showed up with like 30 people.
And like, what if we tripled that? And none of the people who really they really needed.
Yeah.
So you have one more for me?
I do. I have a great one. So this one is, in a weird way, this is the smallest faction that we've discussed in this game, but still quite a few people.
Mm-hmm.
This is the WWF Corporation.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
So is so this the
corporation?
This is before they became a ministry, just like the regular corporation.
I think so. Yes, I think this was just the corporation. I will go ahead and let you know this is before the Undertaker is not listed here. So
great, because I know that they married them later. So when what years did they run? Are they like 97?
This is from, looks like it was created November 15th, 1998, and went to about April of 99, I believe.
Okay.
Yes.
There's got to be like less than 10 members of this.
I'm reading 13, 12 or 13. Hold on. Actual numbers. Sorry, 12. 12 members.
Okay. I'm going to start with Shane McMahon.
That's correct.
I feel like I'm going to only remember the people who weren't regular wrestlers for this group. So it was Shane McMahon, Vince McMahon.
Correct.
Pat Patterson and Gerald Briscoe, who were not really wrestling at that point. Who did The Rock?
That's correct.
Was The Rock the big heel champion for them? Okay. So then it wouldn't be anybody in DX, and it wouldn't be Mankind, because that's who I remember them facing off against Austin. Test?
No. Oh,
that's where I got it wrong.
Test, I am sorry.
That's okay. Who else
the
was
remaining
in
members, I think, because also one thing where like you, there's people who are members for only a very short amount of time.
Yeah, yeah.
There's also Ken Shamrock.
Oh God, that's kind of who I was thinking of in that test role. According, was Ken Shamrock.
According to this list, at least, Kane.
Oh yeah, and was the Big Show in there too?
Big Show, Kane, yeah, Kane, Big Show. Triple H was apparently part of the corporation as well.
Sure.
And then I don't know these last two names. Pete Gass.
Oh yeah, Pete Gass.
And Rodney.
I don't remember Rodney, but Pete Gass was definitely like a friend of Shane McMahon's in storyline. I don't know if he was like friends with him.
Oh wait, hold on. Oh no, I must apologize to you, Andrew. Oh. Test was a member.
Oh. There you go.
He was. So the list that I had, they gave me 12 names, but then below that, if you kept scrolling, there was like an even longer list of more people who were
course,
in the faction.
Because there's always so apologize. Many people. That's okay. I'm actually shocked that I got as many as I did.
The additional names that we didn't mention was Sergeant Slaughter, Shawn Michaels, and China, apparently.
So there must have been
all of DX was at one point a part of the corporation.
There must have been a time where they were in them for like a week or two, but not really oh man, I think we picked the hardest ones possible without dipping into like TNA factions that didn't make any sense.
Exactly, yeah.
So there's been a lot of faction talk that we've had. We've got time for a few more things. I'm curious how the Kayfabe 5000 is looking.
Kayfabe's looking great, man. I've had my team of scientists working on it around the clock, as they always do. Just adding a few more things, calibrating it. I haven't had much time myself to look at it. You know, I've been spending a lot of time playing the new WWE 2K19 game.
Oh, is it good?
It's taken up a lot of my time, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's looking good. I think we could hop in, give it another run if you want.
That sounds great. So flip on that switch.
Let's do it.
I wish you
Oof. Okay.
All right.
I never get used to it.
You're not supposed to.
That's okay. I would love for you to like put some chairs in here that, you know, aren't just cold metal that have some padding, but what can we do? Do you want to lead off with the first question?
Absolutely. So, have a great question for you. So on SmackDown a few weeks ago, we saw Samoa Joe attempt to invade the home of WWE champion AJ Styles.
Yeah.
And the following week, the SmackDown general manager, Paige, she came out and she declared that that act of Samoa Joe trying to invade that home is the most horrendous thing that has ever been done in WWE history. Is she right, Andrew?
Maybe in the time that she's been general manager of SmackDown, sure. But there's a little name I'd like to throw out there that's probably the most horrendous thing that's ever happened in WWE television. I'm not going to go into it. You can Google it if you really want to, but don't do it while you're at work. Does the name Katie Vick ring a bell to you?
Vaguely, you know, it does. I'm kind of getting an idea in my mind. I think she might have played a role in some Big Red Monster's past.
Yeah, that Big Red Monster.
Just put a name to a face.
I wonder if that was brought up at all in that Big Red Monster's run for mayor of Tennessee or not. Clearly not, because he won. But that's I think that's probably the most despicable thing to ever happen. Also, what did AJ think was going to happen if you just put Styles in big, bold letters on your mailbox like that? Like, letting the whole world know
right?
that's where he lives. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, he's clearly not planning ahead. And I'm sure, you know, AJ is a student of the game. I'm sure, you know, he's privy to wrestling history. You know, the a specific moment comes to mind where Stone Cold Steve Austin took a wonderful field trip to the home of Brian Pillman.
Oh, yeah. He was going to shoot himself. There was some weird, like, murder suicide.
He was
gonna
shoot somebody.
Yeah. That's another one that you should like Google, but not while you're at work. So the next question I have for you here, Tyler, it is in fact Ohio versus everything, then where will we see Sami Callihan and the Chris brothers strike next? Perhaps the NFL or on a Hollywood red carpet? Where else do you think?
You know, that's a great question. You know, OVE, that's their whole mantra, you know, Ohio versus everything. And if I know Sami Callihan, and I'm pretty sure I do, I really think that we could see Sami Callihan showing up on a Hollywood red carpet. I think that's the next option. I think there's going to be a movie premiere or something where he's just certainly not feeling it. It might actually, you know what, it's probably going to be the next premiere of some sort of NASA film, because you do know a lot of astronauts do come from Ohio.
I don't think
Sami Callihan and the rest of OVE appreciate the idea of astronauts taking over all the glory coming out of Ohio, you know.
Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense to me. I think that they might try to challenge like the two things that are the most unavoidable in life, death and taxes. So maybe they'll try to take on taxes next.
Maybe hit taxes in the face with a baseball bat.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
So what I got for you, John Cena. The biggest star in WWE right now.
Yeah.
John Cena has been making a lot of posts on social media from China. Andrew, what's he doing in China?
Getting hair transplants, I guess, based on how he looked at the WWE Super Showdown. He was sporting a lot of hair that looked very odd on him. So I think he's probably doing some new age hair therapy there in China. That would be my guess. This one's a case of mistaken identity, I think. There's a new ESPN anchor named Charlie Arnold, and she looks a lot like WWE backstage interviewer Charlie Caruso. In fact, they even have the same first name. Do you think they know each other?
I mean, it's certainly possible. Do we know if Charlie is spelled the same way?
I believe it is.
Oh, wow, it is. You know, it's rare enough that you find not only a woman named Charlie, but spelled the exact same way. Man, it's tough. You know, I got to say it's probably a coincidence, though, because, I mean, you do know those WWE contracts are pretty binding. And so, I mean, mm-hmm. Charlie Caruso, I mean, she's probably very busy. Very, you know, she's got a very tight WWE schedule. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think she's got a lot of time to be out making friends who just happen to have the same name as her.
Yeah, I think it would take too much time to get from Stamford, Connecticut to Bristol, Connecticut, where ESPN is.
Yeah,
I think
absolutely.
Yeah, it's too long of a drive. Yeah.
All right, Andrew, I got one more for you. Now, this is it's the big one. With what the question is, you know, WWE has their new World Cup tournament coming up. And, you know, the World Cup is a great time. You know, everyone enjoys World Cup tournaments. And so I have to ask you, what is more prestigious, the WWE World Cup or the FIFA World Cup?
Well, I mean, the WWE World Cup, the winner is going to get a belt. Would that I assume will have some crown jewels in it, because it's going to be contested at the crown jewel event if it happens. And the FIFA World Cup is just this like very little trophy that looks kind of like tinfoil. So I imagine that it's more prestigious to win the first annual WWE World Cup. Although I do find it odd that as of this recording, all of the people who are participants in the WWE World Cup are all American.
Yeah, that's, you do make a very good point there.
It's kind of like the World Series, I guess, being like world champions of, you know, a sport that's only played in two countries.
The world of the United States.
Yeah. Speaking of, I feel like I'm getting a bit of a headache. I think a bit of the Oktoberfest I went to yesterday is starting to hit me in the head. Or maybe it's just the kayfabe machine. Maybe they're not acting that well together. So could you possibly send us back home, Tyler?
Yeah, you know, I think I can do that. I have to check with the scientists on what their terms of, you know, maybe having an alcoholic drink or two before hopping in the kayfabe.
Oh, was I not supposed to do that?
Or was they still haven't got around to that rules yet. They keep telling me they're gonna let me know, but you know those scientists.
Yeah.
All right, let's get on out of here.
Yep.
Put that cigarette out.
It's still real to me, damn it!
We will ban you from the Summerfest.
You'll be banned from SummerSlam is what you're saying.
SummerSlam.
I slammed out.
Hey, Colt Cabana, how you doing?
Oh my God!
Whew. Oh, I feel much better now. Thank you. Mm. I guess I'm really not supposed to drink and do kayfabe machine driving at the same time.
That's true.
Let that be a lesson to all of you out there.
That's fair.
Well, we've got time for one more segment. It's the return of our undercard MVPs. Was there someone this week, Tyler, for you that was a true MVP that we may not have noticed?
Yeah, absolutely. For me, this week's undercard MVP, which he's not necessarily undercard anymore, but I guess in terms of Vince McMahon's eyesight, he's still the undercard. But for me, it's got to be Buddy Murphy.
Oh yeah,
new WWE Cruiserweight Champion. He won the title at the Super Showdown in Australia, had an amazing hometown crowd there. He had got a great pop when he on his entrance, got a great pop when he won. Easily the best match of the pay-per-view, too. I really enjoyed that match. It was very short, I think, given like the stakes and like what was the finish that they were going to transition to a new champion. But it was still a really great match. I really enjoyed Buddy Murphy. I think he's definitely exceeded expectations of when he was in NXT.
Blake and Murphy.
when he was NXT Tag Team Champions with Blake and Murphy, and when Blake and Murphy kind of dissolved, and it wouldn't looking that great for Buddy Murphy, but I think he has done amazingly, and you know, debuting on the cruiserweight division and excelling, and now he's the champion. I think he's great.
Yeah, I think that was the biggest match that 205 Live has had in front of a big hot crowd so far. It made the biggest impact.
It wasn't on the pre-show.
No, it wasn't. So they made the biggest impact, I think, for that division so far.
Definitely.
Speaking of impacts, my undercard MVP of the week is someone who goes by the name Johnny Impact. He also goes by about a billion other names as well that all start with John. But Johnny Impact, Johnny Mundo, Johnny Nitro, Johnny Morrison, however you know him.
That'd be a great kayfabe question.
Yeah.
When, are they brothers?
Who are all these people? Yeah. So John Morrison, John Hennigan, his real name, Johnny, is on this season of Survivor on CBS, which, yes,
That's
is
amazing.
Still going strong. It's in its 37th season. And
wow.
I'm going to give you the first of hopefully many Johnny Pro Wrestling Survivor updates is okay. that three episodes in, he's still around. He's still around, and he's not really the kind of person who you would think has a good shot at Survivor because he's so big and athletic. And like usually those people get picked off right around this time when like before are going to merge. It's like, ooh, we got to get rid of that guy who's going to beat everybody.
Because I was thinking, I was like, I feel like an extremely like physically fit person like Johnny Impact would be awesome in like a survival scenario, but I guess it's the idea of like people voting people off who could be a threat to them. And
yeah, well, he's the format of the season has really helped him out because it's David versus Goliath, so there are a lot of people on his tribe, the Goliath tribe, who are similar like stature to him, so he can kind of hide, and he has kind of hid so far how good of an athlete he is. He hasn't really tried that hard in the challenges, and he's not just some big dumb meathead. In fact, he's been a very good listener so far and has made an alliance with someone who is one of the most unlikable, easy to vote off people I've ever seen on the show. And him and her worked together to get someone who seemed like a clear winner for the show out this last week.
Oh.
So not only is he big and strong, but somehow people haven't realized it. And he seems like he actually is good at like reading people. So
he's cunning too.
Yeah, he may be an outside shot to win.
What a heel.
Survivor. Well, that's the thing, is he has not played up his like wrestling persona at all on TV so far. He seems very intent on actually winning this thing. So he's my undercard MVP for now. I'll keep people abreast on how he does, that you don't have to watch Survivor. I'll do it for you.
I did not know Survivor was still a thing, Andrew.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it just keeps on going and going.
That is
news. I think that is all the time we have for this week on the show.
Yes.
Got anything to throw out to? Any credits out there? Any things you wanna plug?
Yeah, I'm gonna plug our standard stuff for all of your Turbo Mansion needs and wants. You can find us on Facebook. Just search Turbo Mansion. You can find us on Spotify, YouTube, Amazon, iTunes, Google Play. You can go to Design by Humans and search Turbo Mansion for any of our merch stuff, t-shirts, all that cool stuff. We do have a show coming up. It will be on Wednesday night. This episode, you might be hearing
this will be
this
out on Monday.
That.
So
there you go. Excellent. Yeah. Yes. So this coming Wednesday, we have a show in Richmond, Virginia at what's the name of that place? Garden Grove Brewery. It's on Cary Street, if you're familiar with Richmond. We got a show there that night around 8 or so. If you're in town and want to check it out, please do. We'd love to see you there. And that's about it.
Yeah. I'll remind you guys of the originals. If you want us to answer your questions in the K-Fight 5000, submit them to us on our website, muchadowrestling.com, or on Twitter at @adowrestling, or you can throw them to us on email at muchadowrestling@gmail.com. So we're going to leave you, as we always do, with the words of the immortal bard, the immortal booker, William Shakespeare. If wrestling be the food of love, fight on.
Dig it!
Ooh, that was a good one. I liked the like reverb at the end. That was nice.
Yeah, a little wow.